of VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. Russia claims Ukraine is preparing a provocation involving a radioactive device. AP correspondent Ben Thomas explains.
Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu made the allegation in phone calls Sunday with his counterparts from the U.S., Britain, France, and Turkey. In a televised address, Ukraine's President Vladimir Zelensky says the allegation can only mean Moscow has already prepared its own escalatory step, and he says the international community must make Moscow understand the world will not swallow it. Meantime, Russian-installed officials report building defensive positions in occupied areas of Ukraine and border regions, reflecting fears of a Ukrainian attack along new sections of the 620-mile front line. While the Ukrainian military claims Russian officers have withdrawn from the area, leaving newly mobilized, inexperienced forces to defend it. I'm Ben Thomas.
The rival Koreas have exchanged warning shots along their disputed western sea boundary as animosities rise over North Korea's recent weapons test. South Korea said its Navy broadcast warnings and fired warning shots to propel a North Korean merchant ship that violated the sea boundary early Monday. North Korea's military said its coastal defense units fired artillery warning shots toward its territorial waters where a South Korean naval ship had intruded. No clashes have been reported in the area where past naval skirmishes and violence have occurred. North Korea's recent weapons activity follows what it calls provocative joint military drills between South Korea and the United States. The exercises end this Friday, and the allies will hold joint Air Force drills next week. This is VOA News. Several British lawmakers are jockeying to become the country's next leader following the implosion of Liz Truss's historically short-lived government. One of them is former Prime Minister Boris Johnson, who was ousted by ethics scandals just 3 months ago. The governing Conservative Party ordered a lightning-fast race that aims to have a new prime minister within a week. As inflation soars, millions are struggling to make ends meet. Labor strikes have revealed the scale of discontent, and a recession is looming. Johnson has not declared that he is running, but bookmakers have made him one of the favorites. House of Commons leader Penny Mordaunt was the first to declare she's running. Leading the pack in lawmaker support is former Treasury Chief Rishi Sunak. More than 3 years after Manhattan prosecutors started investigating former U.S. President Donald Trump, after going to the Supreme Court twice to gain access to his tax records, the only criminal trial to arise from their efforts is about to begin. AP correspondent Julie Walker.
President Donald Trump is not going on trial, but his company is, the Trump Organization, accused of helping some top executives avoid income taxes on compensation they got in addition to their salaries. Trump signed off on some of the checks at the center of the case, but is not charged with anything and is not expected to testify or attend the trial, which starts Monday with jury selection. If convicted, the organization could be fined more than $1 million. Last month, the New York Attorney General filed a civil lawsuit accusing Trump and his organization of misleading banks and others for years about the value of assets. That civil suit seeks $250 million and a permanent ban on Trump doing business in the state. Julie Walker, New York.
Former Hurricane Roslyn slammed into a sparsely populated stretch of Mexico's Pacific coast between the resorts of Puerto Vallarta and Mazatlan. Roslyn then declined to tropical storm force and quickly moved inland. But Sunday morning, Roslyn had winds of 35 miles per hour, down from its peak of 130 miles per hour. The U.S. National Hurricane Center said Roslyn was about 60 miles east-southeast of the northern city of Torreon. The hurricane is expected to lose force as it moves further inland. While it missed a direct hit, Roslyn brought heavy rain and high waves to Puerto Vallarta and Tepic, the Nayarit state capital. Roslyn blew down trees and flooded some streets. Recapping our top story, Russia is now claiming Ukraine is preparing a provocation that involves some type of radioactive device. There is more at voanews.com. Fire remote. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News. Thank you.
Today is Monday, October 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, China's powerful leader increases his dominance to a third term as head of the ruling Communist Party.
Xi Jinping took power in 2012. In a break with tradition, he was awarded his third five-year term as General Secretary at the end of the party's Central Committee meeting Sunday.
Pakistan authorities deployed police and paramilitary forces ahead of hearing on a petition by former Prime Minister Imran Khan.
Everybody is anxiously waiting for Monday's proceeding. That's when we will find out exactly why Imran Khan and his lawyer are so sure that this case will be immediately overturned.
And former British Treasury Chief Rishi Sunak emerges as front-runner to replace Liz Truss as Prime Minister. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. China's most powerful leader in decades, President Xi Jinping, increased his dominance after he was named to a third term as head of the ruling Communist Party. Associated Press correspondent Julie Walker reports.
Xi Jinping took power in 2012. In a break with tradition, he was awarded his third five-year term as General Secretary at the end of the party's Central Committee meeting Sunday. The party also named a seven-member standing committee, its inner circle of power, to support his vision of tighter control over society and the struggling economy.
The old Xi Jinping's man.
Jean-Pierre Cabestan is an expert in Chinese politics at Hong Kong Baptist University.
The danger is when there is less pluralism, less debate. More concentration of power.
Meanwhile, questions swirl after former Chinese President Hu Jintao was suddenly escorted off stage Saturday. I'm Julie Walker.
With polls suggesting that Republicans may retake control of the House of Representatives in the November midterm elections, the United States appears set to continue its, quote, tough on China, unquote, policy. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wiraskuwara looks at how a GOP-led Congress might exert more pressure on the Biden administration on various issues from trade relations with Beijing to support for Taiwan.
President Xi Jinping did not mention the United States during the Chinese Communist Party's 20th National Congress this week, but his message was clear. Beijing will double down in the face of Western threats, including on Taiwan.
We are not committed to abandoning the use of force, and we reserve the option of taking all necessary measures.
The CCP Congress cemented a more assertive foreign policy under Xi, who will remain in power for a third term. This sets Beijing on a collision course with the Biden administration, which will be under pressure to be even tougher on China should Republicans win more congressional seats in the November midterm elections and Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy ends up as Speaker of the House.
For 50 years, the Chinese Communist Party has launched an assault on the American way of life, on our economy, on our jobs, on our companies, on our culture, on our institutions, on our very future.
The U.S. Congress is considering the Taiwan Policy Act, a bill aimed at boosting military capability of the self-governed island against a potential Chinese invasion. Beijing considers Taiwan a breakaway province. Various Republican lawmakers have also promised a tougher stance on everything from securing supply chains to investigating the origins of the coronavirus, to make their point that President Joe Biden is soft on Beijing. But even if Democrats retain their slim majority in Congress, Biden's China policy will likely remain hawkish, keeping in place many policies of his predecessor, President Donald Trump, including steep tariffs on Chinese goods and containing Beijing's influence in the Indo-Pacific. Yun Sun, director of the China program at the Stimson Center, via Skype.
Under the Trump administration, the Chinese genuinely hoped that the Democrats would win. But after almost 2 years of the Biden administration, I think the Chinese have come to the realization that both are not going to change the consensus on China. And some in China would even argue that Biden's policy is even more difficult for China because how Biden aligns his position and mobilizes allies and partners to jointly counter China's growing influence.
Should Republicans retake Congress, observers say there will be more skepticism toward Biden's approach of competing strategically with China while cooperating on transnational challenges such as climate change. Patsy Widakuswara, Viewing News, Washington.
The U.S. and other NATO members have sent billions of dollars worth of weapons and equipment to Ukraine to help it in its fight against Russia's invasion. But that now presents a dilemma for European countries facing weapon shortages as they weigh the risk that Russia could target them next. Associated Press correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
After 8 months of intense fighting, the Allies expect the war will continue, maybe years, with both sides rapidly using up weapons supplies. Victory may come down to who can last longer. This Ukrainian commander asked to be identified just as Yuri.
Most of the times we have problems with tanks and artillery.
We're standing up for Ukraine's right to defend itself.
Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has urged NATO members to dig deep and provide Ukraine more, thanking his Estonian counterpart at the Pentagon this week.
We can all see the differences that these efforts are making on the ground and the progress that the Ukrainians have made in their counteroffensive.
Estonian Defense Minister Hannu Pevkur.
We will stand united with all of our allies today to make sure that in the future we will not look back and think that we could have done more.
But Pevkur notes the strain on countries' own defense stockpiles comes up all the time, especially among smaller NATO countries. Estonia shares a 183-mile border with Russia, and he says the question is, how much risk are you ready to take? Still, with U.S. support, he says,
Estonia will acquire HIMARS systems that will substantially reinforce the Estonian defense forces.
Ben Thomas, Washington.
Pakistan authorities have deployed police and paramilitary forces ahead of Monday's hearing by a high court on a petition by former Prime Minister Imran Khan challenging his ban from running for elective office. Protesters took to the streets after the top election tribunal found Khan guilty of unlawfully selling gifts from foreign dignitaries and head of state, a charge he denied. The ruling adds to the political and economic uncertainty plaguing the nuclear-armed nation. For more, I spoke with VOA's Ayaz Gaul.
The Prime Minister's lawyer has presented to the media all the documents suggesting or establishing their side of the claim that they have not hidden any of the earning or income that the Prime Minister has made while in office, and it is a public knowledge. So there's a lot of confusion, and that is why everybody is anxiously waiting for Monday's proceedings, you know, once they open in this case. That's when we will find out exactly why Imran Khan and his lawyer are so sure that this case will be immediately overturned. Imran Khan, in a press conference yesterday here in Islamabad, reiterated his announcement that he is going to march on Islamabad with tens of thousands of his supporters to press the government to hold early elections.
Immediately after the announcement of the decision by the electoral body, supporters of Imran Khan went to the streets and there was some kind of protest and rioting. How would you describe the mood of the country?
There is tension in Islamabad, particularly because that's where the federal government is located, and we see massive deployment of police already and paramilitary forces. And it is because we know that Imran Khan right now, all the surveys have established that he's the most popular leader, and whatever rallies he has held so far after his dismissal, there are like hundreds of thousands of people who have attended these rallies in some cases. But if this kind of a support he's enjoying, obviously his party also has government in two Pakistani provinces, in Punjab province and northwest Khyber Pakhtunkhwa provinces. So he enjoys a lot of support in these two provinces. So if all these people, they have already held rallies, and on Friday when he was disqualified, we saw there was no call from Imran Khan or his party leaders, but there were people, thousands of people in major cities who took to the streets, and, you know, there were clashes with police. So that shows that there could be a challenging situation, law and order situation for the authorities in the coming days, you know, if he really goes ahead with this planned long march that he has promised to take out later this month. Imran Khan is facing serious allegations also that he's intentionally creating chaos in the country through these kind of protest rallies. But at the same time, his supporters and advisors say that in any democracy, they have the right to agitate and protest against what they say are wrongdoings of the current government.
That's VOA's Ayaz Gaul speaking with me from Islamabad. The United Nations Refugee Agency says the South Sudanese flood victims are in desperate need of international support. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Climate change is wreaking havoc in Africa. Aid agencies struggle to find food and other aid to millions of people suffering from 4 years of devastating drought in the Horn of Africa. To the west, South Sudan is dealing with the impact of 4 years of historic flooding. The UN Refugee Agency says 4 years of record rains have flooded two-thirds of the country. It warns the climate emergency displacing increasing numbers of people and making life harder for those already uprooted by the catastrophic rains. UNHCR spokesman Boris Cheshirkov told reporters Friday that worse is to come as the climate crisis accelerates.
Over 900,000 people have been directly impacted. Waters have swept away homes and livestock, forced thousands to flee, and inundated large swathes of farmland, worsening an already dire food emergency. Boreholes and latrines have been submerged, contaminating water sources and risking the outbreak of disease.
The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says flooding has inundated 9 of the country's 10 states, including oil-rich Unity, Warup, Upper Nile, and Jonglei states. It says these states are sheltering hundreds of thousands of people fleeing conflict and weather. Cheshikov said Bentiu, Unity's capital, has become an island surrounded by floodwaters. He says all roads in and out of the city are impassable and it is only reachable by boat or air. While the flooding is blocking aid delivery to those most in need, he said aid workers also are having a tough time reaching ethnic conflict areas.
It's a cycle which then promotes further displacement or makes it much more difficult for people because they have heightened protection needs. Sexual exploitation and abuse, of course, this is one of the top priorities for our teams. It is to make sure that all the work that can be done to prevent and in if there are cases to respond, but that is also one of the top priorities for us.
Cheshikov said the UNHCR has received only 44% of the nearly $250 million it needs for its South Sudan operation this year. Priority needs, he said, include food, shelter, water, and sanitation supplies as stocks of basic items are running out. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In other news, former British Treasury Chief Rishi Sunak is front-runner in the Conservative Party race to replace Liz Truss as Prime Minister. He has garnered support of over 100 Tory lawmakers to forge ahead of his two main rivals, ousted former Prime Minister Boris Johnson and ex-Cabinet Minister Penny Mordaunt. But widespread uncertainty remained after British media reported that Sunak held late-night talks with Johnson on Saturday. Speculations mounted that the pair could strike a deal to unite the fractured party. The Conservative Party has ordered a contest that aims to finalize nominations Monday and install a new Prime Minister, its third this year, within a week. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinua Adofo in Washington. A U.S.-based mission will be among the first to begin removing junk from space, grabbing it with a huge claw and moving it into orbit that will see it burn up in the atmosphere. Louisa Nax of Reuters reports.
A UK-based mission is set to remove junk from space. Using a giant claw, the CLEAR mission will remove two large pieces of space debris from low Earth orbit in what is the first attempt to ease the dangerously congested space environment. Space debris, also known as space junk, is made up of discarded launch vehicles or parts of spacecraft. The US Federal Communications Commission says of 10,000 satellites deployed since 1957, more than half are no longer working. These float around in space at tremendous speeds, up to 15,700 miles per hour, in low Earth orbit, risking collision with a satellite or space station. That's where ClearSpace comes in. In 2019, the European Space Agency, or ESA, selected ClearSpace to lead the first mission to remove an ESA-owned item from orbit. Here's ClearSpace UK's managing director, Rory Holmes.
Our systems will be able to remove multiple pieces of space debris. They'll go, grab onto one, pull it down safely out of the way, then go back and get the next one and do the same. So, yeah, our systems will remove multiple pieces of debris with each mission.
The CLEAR mission launch is planned for 2025 to 2026. Along with a consortium of companies, ClearSpace hope to remove two UK-registered objects that have been inactive for more than 10 years.
They all get close to them, navigate close to them, and then attach, grab onto them, give them a big hug with our robotic capabilities, and then pull them down out of the way and let them safely burn up in the atmosphere and prevent them causing trouble or crashing or interacting with other space objects.
Cleaning up debris is expected to be a huge growth area for what's being called in-orbit services. It's a new sector, which is estimated to be worth more than $14 billion by 2030. That's not all. ClearSpace also want to improve sustainability in orbit. They say this is about keeping satellites operating as much as removing the waste.
That's Louisa Nax of Reuters. And Finnish researchers have found that glyphosate-based herbicides affect the learning and memory of important pollinator, the bumblebee, weakening its ability to forage and nest. Olivia Chan of Reuters has more.
Weed killers can negatively impact the vision, learning ability and memory of bumblebees. That's according to Finnish researchers. They found that the effects of even a small amount of glyphosate-based herbicides could severely weaken the bees' foraging and nesting success.
Bumblebees are the native pollinators and they're super important. And without bumblebees, we don't have berries in the forests, for example.
Olli Lukola is the associate professor at the University of Oulu. He and his colleagues found that a small dose of weed killer affected the bumblebee's ability to learn and memorize connections between colors and taste.
In order to forage nectar and pollen from the flowers, they need to find the flowers. And they're using color cues, but also scent cues. So they can smell the flowers, but they really need the color vision in order to find the right flowers. So it's super important for the bees to discriminate the different colors.
The bumblebees were tested in a 10-color discrimination task in which the bees learned to associate 5 specific colors with a rewarding sugar solution and another 5 colors with a quinine solution. Some of the bees were exposed to a similar dose of herbicide that pollinating bumblebees might be exposed to in a sprayed field. Others were not. Bumblebees which were not exposed to the herbicide were able to distinguish colors and remembered what they learned after 3 days. Bumblebees that were exposed learned significantly less and forgot almost everything they had learned within a few days.
If they lose their cognitive abilities to find food for the nest, then it means that the nests will vanish. They cannot survive because too few new queens are kind of emerging from the nests, and it might be that it's not enough to keep them going.
However, in an easier test with just a 2-color discrimination task, the herbicide treatment did not seem to affect the bumblebee's performance. Bumblebees are larger than honeybees, and while they do not produce honey, they are important pollinators. They play a crucial role in producing healthy fruits or seeds for 3/4 of the crops that feed people, according to the United Nations. But their population is declining. Studies have shown links to heavy pesticide use and habitat loss, as well as rising global temperatures.
That's Olivia Chan of Reuters.
This is Science in a Minute.
Some look at the James Webb Space Telescope to be somewhat of a time machine, since its designers and developers say it will be able to capture celestial images as they looked from 250 to 100 million years after the Big Bang. According to NASA and the Space Telescope Science Institute, researchers using the Webb Telescope recently discovered an enormous galaxy cluster being formed around a powerful and exceptionally red quasar as they looked some 11.5 billion years ago. Quasars, considered to be the most luminous objects in the known universe, are illuminated by gas being drawn into a supermassive black hole by its powerful gravity. Scientists say these enormous black holes can be found at the center of most galaxies and can have masses that are equivalent to millions or even billions of suns. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Protests have been growing inside and outside Iran, initially sparked by the death in police custody of Mahsa Amini, a young woman arrested by Iran's morality police for not having her hair fully covered. Each Wednesday, Go beyond the breaking news with VOA's Flashpoint Iran. Listen online at voanews.com or in your podcast player.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. You can listen to Encounter on Saturdays and Sundays. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on the Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs program Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinua Adofo in Washington, wishing you a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States will live up to its commitments in the Indo-Pacific. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin said in a recent interview, "We continue to work to make sure that we have the right capabilities in the right places to ensure that we help our allies maintain a free and open Indo-Pacific." When asked about the People's Republic of China's increased military activity and incursions into the Taiwan Strait, Secretary of Defense Austin said, "China is moving to establish what we would call a new normal. We saw a number of centerline crossings of the Taiwan Strait by their aircraft, and that number has increased over time. We've seen more activity in their surface vessels in the waters in and around Taiwan." The defense secretary stressed that the United States does not want to see a unilateral change to the status quo regarding Taiwan, and that the One China policy of the United States has not changed. He noted that in accordance with the Taiwan Relations Act, we're committed to helping Taiwan develop the capability to defend itself, and that work has gone on over time. It will continue into the future. Last month on her trip to Asia, Vice President Kamala Harris underscored the same commitment in her remarks aboard the USS Howard in Yokosuka, Japan. She noted the PRC's disturbing behavior in the East China Sea and in the South China Sea, and most recently provocations across the Taiwan Strait. "We will continue to oppose any unilateral change to the status quo," the vice president said, "and we will continue to support Taiwan's self-defense consistent with our long-standing policy." Taiwan, she stated, is a vibrant democracy that contributes to the global good, from technology to health and beyond, and the United States will continue to deepen our unofficial ties. The United States does not see conflict or a Cold War with the PRC. "In fact," said Vice President Harris, "we will work with every willing nation to solve global challenges." The United States is a proud Pacific power, the vice president declared. "The presence of the United States in the Indo-Pacific is in pursuit of peace and stability and to support our allies and partners."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.